Blog Talk Radio.
All right, after some technical difficulties, we are back. Brady, are you here? Hello?
Hello?
Brady, are you here? Brady?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can. As long as you can hear me.
Woot.
Blog Talk Radio having problems yet again. So we're about to talk about the Cup race, or the All-Star race, which, again, you had stated a fantastic fact. Chase Elliott and Bill Elliott, his father, are the only drivers to win at the All-Star race at the non-Charlotte track. I mean, that's just incredible to see. It's staying in the family, I guess.
Well, it just shows that Chase Elliott is once again proving that he's definitely one of the most promising up-and-coming stars in the Cup Series. He's definitely not one of my favorite drivers, but I know why a lot of people have kind of gravitated towards him and why a lot of fans find him appealing. And it was great to see him get a good win. That's definitely going to be a huge boost of confidence for him. But it's been kind of an up-and-down season so far for the whole Hendrick camp, especially since coming back from the COVID break. And definitely that was the kind of confidence and momentum booster that 19 made. We're getting closer and closer to the start of the 2020 playoffs.
That's a big thing, too, about that is the fact that, you know, even though this isn't a points race, that definitely gives you a big boost of confidence. You know, winning the All-Star race, winning that $1 million, that high kind of continues throughout the season. One big thing to note, too, is that there was some odd, I want to say some odd people up front, or at least on there. Kyle Busch, who hasn't been the strongest, he's been up there finishing second. And then you have Kevin Harvick, Kevin Harvick, Brad Keselowski, and Denny Hamlin were my three picks to really win. I didn't see anyone else really having a chance there. I thought Matt Benedetto might have a good chance, depending on where he would draw if he made it in. But it was just surprising to see both Chase and Kyle up there, and surprising that Kyle didn't try to take Chase out in that 15-lap shootout we had at the end.
Oh, definitely if Kyle had the momentum and could get the bumper there, there definitely would have been a bump and run. But honestly, one driver you kind of left off that list that was one of the better drivers all evening long was Ryan Blaney. Blaney led the only other stage that Chase Elliott did not lead went to Blaney, and he looked really strong. And Blaney's a driver that has shown a lot of promise at Bristol. He's led the most laps in now the last two spring races, but has had things go, not, you know, getting his way. He's been swept up in crashes when he's been leading before. So he's definitely been a snake-bitten driver. It looked like he might be able to shake off some of that bad luck early on in the All-Star race, but it wasn't long before, you know, he kind of got himself a little bit behind the eight ball there, and Chase Elliott was able to rise to the occasion and kind of put a whooping on the field.
Not just on the field, he whooped that $1 million check into his bank account. Overall, not a boring race, but just again, it's weird not to see the mayhem that comes about the All-Star race, especially that last 15-lap shootout. Normally, with that, we tend to see a lot more cars take riskier and gutsier moves and takes out half the field. This though, every car came back. Maybe a couple dings, a couple scratches, but something that they could take and bring back. You know, Chase Elliott might bring that car back to Bristol later this year when we have the playoff race.
Yeah, and that would be a great time to bring it back, because it was very similar conditions to what they'll be experiencing when they come back for that later race, because that's usually the night race, and that's what we had on Wednesday. So definitely going to be a lot more notes they can pull out of the notebook from running that race than what they would have gotten from their notebook just about a month ago.
That is for sure. So the running order, everyone on the lead lap, nothing crazy. Chase Elliott, the win. Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, Brad Keselowski, Denny Hamlin, Ryan Blaney, who led 72 laps, Alex Bowman, or Joey Logano, I'm sorry, in seventh. Alex Bowman, who led two laps, Eric Almirola, Martin Truex, the top 10, Eric Jones, William Byron, Matt DiBenedetto, Justin Haley in that Spire Motorsports car. Not terrible for them, but in front of a lot of great cars, including Clint Bowyer in the 15th spot, Cole Custer, Jimmy Johnson, Matt Kenseth, Ryan Blaney, and Kurt Busch. Everyone on the lead lap. Everyone brings a car home. No damage, no dinging. Thank God for a lot of those teams.
Oh, no, definitely that was a big risk factor anytime you enter the All-Star race, since there's no points and really no point to it aside from bragging rights and money. Maybe it's some extra track time. It's definitely a risk for some of those lower-budget teams, especially if they get wrapped up in an incident not of their own making. But thankfully, everyone had a clean race, and we didn't have to worry about that, minus the Bubba Wallace and Michael McDowell.
Yeah. So then after that, we had a doubleheader on, I believe it's Saturday. Yes, yeah, Saturday, we had the Xfinity and the Trucks run at Texas Motor Speedway. The Xfinity race was first, and that race was really good. And then there's a disqualification that made so many people happen, including the winner of the race of the what is that even word?
Biometric?
Biometric Solutions 300. Austin Cindric got the technical win after Kyle Busch was disqualified for having a ride height in the rear too low.
Yep, Kyle Busch's lower right rear was deemed outside the NASCAR regulations, and that not only handed Austin Cindric the win, but that is the Penske driver's third win in a row in the Sportsman Series, Xfinity Series, and that goes back to him sweeping the weekend last week at the doubleheader for the Xfinity Series in Kentucky. So whatever they found the last couple weeks, the Penske group, they are on a roll, and honestly, it's not surprising. In a lot of the races, especially in the races leading up to the COVID break and the couple races since coming back, Cindric has been in the conversation. He's been right there in the mix of things with Chase Briscoe and Noah Gregson and Harrison Burton, who have been kind of dominating a lot of the limelight. You know, he's led a lot of stages, won a lot of stages, but hasn't been able to put it together in that final stage. But these last three weeks, you can definitely call him lucky as he's had everything kind of go his way.
Oh, that's for sure. And the thing is, too, it's not like he didn't lead any laps. He actually led quite a few laps. So it's not like he didn't lead and he got second. He led 44 laps of the entire race, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it was a good chunk compared to Justin Allgaier, who surprisingly got third after leading 98 laps. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought I lost it. But it's odd to see that Justin Allgaier, after leading almost half of the entire race, doesn't win. Because anytime we see Justin Allgaier dominating racing, he tends to be the only factor. He'll come up and he'll be contending for the win. This case, I didn't feel like he was that threatening towards the end of the race. I don't know if his car got way too loose or something, but it's odd to see how great Justin Allgaier is at a lot of these cookie-cutter tracks, how he goes from being really dominant to not really a threat, even though he's led so many laps.
And, you know, honestly, that's been kind of the tale of his career these last couple seasons. He had such a great breakout year in 2018, scoring several wins and was a real legitimate factor for the championship. And then last year, he struggled mightily, only got that one win right before the homestead finale that qualified him into the final four. But then this year, it's seeming very similar, where he's had a fast car for a lot of these events, been definitely leading a lot of laps, but in the final stages when really it all matters and when everything's on the line, the team crumbles and it's kind of buckled under the pressure, and we've not seen him take on those wins and take advantage of a lot of the opportunities that the 17 felt like, in my opinion, were in a winning position. So I don't know if it's a bigger thing going on with the Junior Motorsports camp or just that 17, but they've definitely had trouble closing these races out.
Well, one thing that I think that kind of says it might be his end is you just look at Junior Motorsports as a whole. They've been, I mean, it's not they haven't been dominant or they haven't been racing well, but you look at Noah Gregson, he's the only driver with a win this year, two wins. Everyone else, Justin Allgaier, Michael Annett, and everyone that fills in that number eight car, even his own boss, Junior Dale Jr., hasn't gotten a win. So the organization might be in this time period of we're not too sure of this or that. They're working on it, but it's very hard to tell what direction they're really going.
You know, that was kind of the same way as it was last year. Last year they only had the two wins, one with Allgaier and one with Michael Annette. So it was a very similar situation they found themselves in. And that's a year after having a fantastic season, winning two races with Tyler Reddick in the championship in 2018, and then about four or five races there with Justin Allgaier also in 2018, and just a few seasons removed from when they were running races with William Byron. So definitely they've kind of slipped just a little bit from what their championship heydays had kind of led us all to expect from the Junior Motorsports Camp, but I don't think it'd be too long before we start seeing them mixing it up a lot more. We've seen a lot of speed out of Noah Gregson all season. Some controversy, especially even in this race. We'll talk about that here in just a moment. But Michael Annette also shown a lot of promise this year, getting another top five for the number one Chevrolet. And then even the 8 car, they've had their struggles. You know, they've been involved in some wrecks, but they've also been solid whenever they've been able to put it all together. And they left Saturday's race with another strong top 10 with Jeb Burton getting 6th. So the speed is definitely there. I just think they have an execution problem where they're not, you know, putting themselves in the right position in the final stages, not making the right adjustments there to put them in the thick of things. But I feel like they have all the ingredients that they need to put the full package together. They just are just right outside that bubble of getting it all aligned properly.
That's for sure. And you look at, you know, that top six, you know, you have the two Fords and then you have three junior motorsports cars. And then with the one Toyota of Joe Gibbs, of Harrison Burton. I mean, it's just the domination is obviously there for just these four teams. And I do have to say four because the two Fords that are out there, Austin Cindric and Chase Briscoe, they're not teammates. One's for Roger Penske. The other one is for Stuart Haas Racing. It's so weird to see. You know, it's great to see the dominance is there, but it's also feeling like, you know, the Fords are the only ones that are really competitive, it feels like. They're the only ones really getting more consistent wins, you know. Austin Cindric getting 3. Chase Briscoe, I think he's gotten, what, 4? 5 at this point this year? 5?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at that. That's 8 wins between two drivers. And by the way, Chase Briscoe said he needs to get 5 to 10 or 8 to 10 wins this year, and he's on track for it.
They're definitely well on their way. That was the 16th race of the 2020 season, and half of them have gone to the Blue Oval, and that's just even more impressive, just considering the numbers that they're down to. Ford used to be one of the biggest presences in the Xfinity Series, and they were winning consistently all over the board. And they were just definitely the force you didn't want to mess with. But these last few years, their numbers have dwindled. Prominent organizations like the venerable Jack Roush fleet that held many, many race victory wins underneath their banner and the Xfinity Series, many championships as well. They folded a couple of years back due to sponsorship woes. Other major teams have kind of fallen by the wayside. Even Penske, which used to field 2 or 3 cars in this division, they're down to just the one shoe there, and same with Stuart Haas Racing, down to just the number 98 there. So definitely sad to see what the once mighty Ford down to just 2 entries, but they're definitely making the most of those 2 entries because they're either winning stages or winning races or both in a lot of cases. And even though Chevy has the sheer numbers, they got a lot of work to do to catch up to where the Blue Ovals are right now. And even Toyota does too. That Supra, while it's been fast, while it's shown some domination whenever it's gotten it just right, it's not near the prominence we were seeing just a few years ago with those Camrys. So they've still got a little bit of work to do over there in the Toyota camp. And speaking of Chevys and Toyotas, we kind of hinted at it a little bit there. Kind of, I don't know if it's directly related or what. I didn't get the full scope on the situation. But during the race, Noah Gregson and Riley Herbst racing for position, they made contact, which ended up putting Herbst directly into the outside wall, taking him out of the event. That'd be the second Joe Gibbs Racing driver that's tangled with Noah Gregson in the last 2 weeks. And Herbst was none too pleased, and obviously you can't blame him. I've looked at the wreck a few times. I mean, I don't know if I'm missing something. It looked very much like a racing incident to me, but as like I said, I only got glances in very high level, so I'm not really sure what all transpired there, but Definitely an ongoing trend here between the number nine, Noah Gregson, and the Joe Gibbs Racing contingent. Just one driver left that he's not tangled with. So definitely, you know, putting the kind of pressure you don't want on yourself as we're getting closer to playoff time. It's kind of putting a target on his back, and he should probably be careful these next few weeks because definitely, I mean, I wouldn't fault the Joe Gibbs drivers for, you know, enacting some sort of retaliation if it were presents itself, and, you know, a lot of people might say deservedly so.
I mean, definitely looking over the replay of it, it just looks like Noah had more speed. It's hard to tell if Riley had been holding him up or not for a lap or so, which could be possible. I mean, some of these drivers, if you're going to hold them up, they're going to, you know, use your bumper. And I mean that. They're going to push and push and push until you either get the rear tires up and out of the or off the racetrack and then you just start spinning, or you figure out, oh, I need to get out of his way. So I think this one was a little more – was more of a racing incident. You know, Riley is he's not – it's odd. He hasn't really ran full seasons in anything. This is his first full season in something. You know, not a lot of success per se. No wins or stuff like that. So it's hard to really gauge what, you know, Riley's learning ability, I guess, is the best way. He definitely needs to learn more and know and learn how to handle situations and handle the track. So I would put that one more of a racing incident. Now, if we go back a while in Las Vegas, that one was totally Noah Gregson wrecking someone or trying to wreck someone. So for me personally, that you're right. It looks more of a racing incident than it looks like anything else. But Riley also is with that Joe Gibbs camp, like he said, that are not too happy with Noah, along with a lot of other people. So the list just gets longer and longer and longer right now.
Well, it all came back full circle. I mean, I guess it's one of those reap what you sow kind of deals, especially when it comes to racing. But Gregson, while racing for position with a eventual winner, Austin Cindric, just another one of those racing deals, just kind of they ran out of room, got into each other, and that planted the number nine squarely into the outside wall, which set up the second to last caution of the race, that occurring on lap 118, taking Noah Gregson out of the race. So it was one of those deals where it's like, yeah, I mean, what goes around comes around. Both definitely looked like racing, nothing, a whole lot of malice there. And, you know, I get definitely a lot of people probably turned on Gregson after the Las Vegas incident. I mean, it doesn't get more blatant than that, intentionally wrecking a guy. But I maintain and stand by what I said a few weeks ago, that I feel like he's been unfairly put into this villain role in the Xfinity Series. Like, I feel like the media's kind of hyped it up to kind of give someone to wear the black hat in the second-tier division, kind of be the Kyle Busch of the Xfinity Series. And I don't think that personality really fits Noah Gregson as a driver. Yes, he's a hard charger. Yes, he's going to, you know, race you hard, but I don't see him as a dirty driver or a villain-esque character either, especially when you see him in his interviews and and on social media and the kind of personality he's trying to bring to the sport. I just don't think that really meshes well. And I still maintain, I feel like there's a bit of a double standard between moves that Noah Gregson does on the track that are no different than a guy like Ross Chastain or Kyle Busch, and those drivers get praised, but I think it's just more on fan perception and, you know, kind of media spin there for just a little bit. But we'll see how it goes. It definitely is going to test Noah Gregson very early on in his career about how to hold himself, how to keep himself poised, and about his character. And those are some things that are definitely important for you as a driver, because it's not just going fast and turning circles. You also got to present yourself in a manner that's marketable, that gets people to follow you, that makes sponsors see you as an appealing option to back. So he's definitely getting the proper test, and he's doing a good job of holding his own, but I still maintain the hill that I'm set to die on, that I feel like he's been unfairly cast in the villain role that I don't think quite adds up. But we'll see how it continues to pan out. We still got another few races to go here before the playoffs. And honestly, after the last few weeks, the playoff picture has taken kind of a bit of a turn. Chase Briscoe is still very solidly out front, but now Austin Cindric has kind of chipped at it ever so lightly and slightly, and now with three consecutive wins has now moved his way up into second place, moving Noah Gregson back to third. And they are now trail Chase Briscoe by 24 points and 48 points, respectively.
And if you look at that fourth place, Ross Chastain, 77 points. No wins for him, but again, and I heard this too, consistency is the key. If you look at Matt Crafton when he won his last championship last year, and another Matt called Matt Kenseth when he won his championship, funny enough, he never won any race that season. He just consistently was in the top five and top ten. Huh?
He won one. He won at Las Vegas that year.
That's right. That's right. He won. But that's the thing, though. You see a lot of champions win multiple races with consistency like Ross is having and like Matt Crafton had. And even with Matt Kenseth, that was before the whole playoff system. Just because you got one win didn't mean you automatically be qualified for the championship. Consistency is the key. So I feel confident Ross is going to stay right there in that fourth place, especially with how big the points deficit is between him and Justin Haley. He'll definitely make it, and I think he'll be in probably the final four when we get to Phoenix, if that's where the season ending will happen, period.
And, you know, and also another good season to kind of remind yourself on about, especially in the Xfinity Series, about a winless champion, Austin Dillon in his 2013 campaign. He rode the strength of major consistency and ended up taking the title over Sam Harris Jr. that year, who had a couple wins to his credit in the 2013 campaign. So sometimes it may not be the flashiest way to win a championship, but a championship is a title nonetheless. And so we've seen it a lot kind of here in the recent years, kind of different ways we tweak the playoff format, trying, you know, make winning more the key. But it still shows that even if winning is the most important thing you can do in the series, that sometimes good old consistency will get you there just as quick.
That's for sure. So run down it. Again, Austin Cindric winning the race overall. Chase Briscoe, Justin Allgaier, Harrison Burton, Michael in that top five. Jeb Burton, Brandon Jones, Justin Haley, Ross Chastain, Brandon Brown, top 10. Great run for him. Jeremy Clemens, Jeffrey Earnhardt, David Starr, Jesse Little, and Tommy Joe Martin. All small teams finishing in the top 15. Great runs for them. Brent Moffitt, Timmy Hill, Stephen Parrish, Bailey Curry, BJ McLeod, your top 20, Joe Graff Jr., Josh Williams, Colby Howard, Chad Sisson, Vinny Miller, your top 25, Matt Millis, Anthony Alfredo with a little bit of a bad run for himself, finishing 27th, Kyle Weatherman, Ryan Sieg, and Noah Gregson, all your top 30, Alex LeBay, Cody Vanderwall, Dexter Bean, who we haven't seen race that often this year, good to see him back, Matt Schneider, and Stephen Lynch, 35th. Riley Herbst and Kyle Busch, even though he won the race, he was disqualified, got 37th.
And for all you fans,
so right after
there,
that,
I wouldn't feel too bad for old Kyle Busch, because later on that evening, he got a bit of a redemption for himself in claiming the victory in the Truck Series race in his final start of the 2020 campaign behind the wheel of the 51 truck.
Yes, the 2020 Vancouver 250. Kyle Busch came out dominating fashion, beating 72 laps, getting the win, but it wasn't easy for him. He had to fight for it, which was great to see.
Oh, yeah, no, and he had to duel with drivers like Zane Smith, who continues to impress so far this season. Didn't get the finish that I felt like he thought he was going to get, especially after showing so much promise in the early laps, but he definitely kept Kyle Busch honestly in 26 laps, and then Kyle Busch's own driver, Christian Eckes, who's finally had his breakout race after struggling a little bit to kind of get up to speed and get used to these KBM trucks in his rookie campaign. He led 52 laps, the second most of Kyle Busch's 72, and honestly looked like he might have something for his boss there in the waning lap, but when it came time to paying out the money, it was Kyle Busch dashing away with the Checkered flag there. That was his 59th career win in the Truck Series, and I believe it may have been his fifth at Texas. Also looked that one up, but definitely the bounce back that driver was looking for.
For sure. And Kyle learned before he climbed into the truck what had happened. So I think that gave him a driving force, but you're right, Kristen Eckes and Zane Smith, two drivers. By the way, we've said Zane's name quite a bit this year. He's making more waves. He's actually taking risks and driving hard because it's not too sure whether or not he's in a contract year or not. He actually ran part-time last year for Junior Motorsports, got this ride at GMS Racing, and I mean, he's taking full advantage of it, not only leading laps, being up there contending for wins when he's able to, but also showing off that, hey, he's a force to reckon with, not only if you're a regular in the Truck Series, but also if you're Kyle Busch. I mean, he's not going to take crap, which is great to see. Overall, the truck race, really entertaining, really great action overall for a bunch of great racing, which at Texas we kind of see often, but I feel like the truck race always gives us great races no matter what.
See, I'm not near as nice as you, Zach. I think Texas is kind of a boring facility, and the truck race is the only race I've ever found entertaining at the 1.5 mile track there in Fort Worth. Because the trucks, they're loose, they're fast, and that track is very treacherous. And so that's the perfect combination for some great, great racing whenever the trucks are on the field. But overall, I've always kind of found Texas to be kind of a snoozer. This weekend was, you know, kind of on par. It was not a great racing, but it wasn't bad racing. I've definitely seen a lot worse when it comes to Texas. And honestly, I thought PJ won. Kind of provides some interesting, you know, strategy elements and drivers being able to take some different lines. Kind of similar to what we saw at Kentucky, but I felt like the Texas track lended itself to better side-by-side racing. Definitely was very treacherous if you got yourself too high and got up in the sticky part and then the marbles. We saw that snake bite a lot of drivers this weekend, including a 7-time champion in the Cup Series. But no, overall, the truck race was really good. I was very, very by the numbers, very standard for what you come to expect in that series. A lot of great regulars that were able to hold their own, put up a good fight, lead some laps, and, you know, shine positively on that series. But in the end, it's the king of the truck series himself. Kyle Busch is continuing to rack up another win. But thankfully, that's the last time we'll have to worry about him kind of stinking up the show until 2021. But after some of the performances we saw on Saturday night, definitely it's got me excited for the second half of the Truck Series season, because a lot of regulars definitely show that they have the potential to really steal the headlines and the spotlight as we're getting closer to playoff times and even closer to crowning our next champion.
And real quick, before we get the driver results, the bounty system is back, but this one's a little different. So last year there was this, it wasn't the bounty system. I can't remember. Do you remember what it was called last year? It's the same this year, isn't it?
I thought the bounty was just a this year deal. I didn't know they had anything similar to the bounty last year, unless it was like the Dash for Cash.
The Dash for Cash for the Truck Series. It's back.
Yeah, I call that Dash for Cash in the Xfinity Series. That wasn't like a bounty, but the Triple Truck Challenge, kind of like the Dash for Cash for familiar with it in the Xfinity Series. It's where they select four drivers to compete for, I believe it was $100,000, just like the Dash for Cash. Same kind of rules apply of the four drivers, whoever places highest. Unlike the Dash for Cash, you have to win, though, to claim the money. Was that the whole deal?
Yes, so no matter what, you got the money. But here's the thing. The three races that they did it for, the money would be more if you were the same winner. So, for instance, if Ross Chastain, if his win at Iowa was held, he would have won more money at the Gateway. So instead of it being $50,000 and then another $50,000, I think it would have been $100,000 on top, so it would have been $150,000. So they're doing that for the next three races, which includes the Daytona road course, Gateway, and I believe Dover is the other track.
I haven't kept up with that one this year, so that's not I don't know.
It's so hard to tell with everything that's going on. So essentially, if you win all three of the next races, which they're going to be doing it for, Daytona, Dover, and Gateway. If you win those three races, you could win up to $1 million. I mean, that's just an incredible thing to see, and it will be interesting to see what people are going to how hard teams are going to push for that money.
And it's definitely going to be a real truck challenge there for them. NASCAR made the announcement today that kind of ties into that, especially when we were talking about the Daytona road course, a track surface that no one in the top three divisions have any experience on, but all three series will be racing at that tricky infield road course here in a couple weeks. And without practice, NASCAR has announced officially that for the remainder of the 2020 campaign events in this post-COVID hellscape we found ourselves in, they are going to keep this current format of doing random draw qualifying and not having any practice laps or qualifying laps in a given race weekend. So for tracks like, coming up at Kansas and Dover,
that the teams are familiar with. They have that notebook they can rely on. It's going to suck, but it's not going to be as big a deal. But when we get to that Daytona road course in a few weeks, and especially for the Truck Series drivers who will have so much on the line with this this Triple Chuck Challenge, having that mandate of knowing that they're going to be completely blind when they drop the green flag on a track that they have no experience on and have only tackled the high bank, they have no idea how their vehicles are going to handle on that infield course, it's definitely going to raise some eyebrows and keep a lot of teams on edge.
And real quick with that, too, there's actually drivers lobbying for NASCAR to get them some practice at that track because they do need it. The only information they have is sim rigs or even Kyle Busch, but Kyle has only ran an IMSA car there for Lexus earlier this year. He's the only driver in the field other than Chase Briscoe Haley Deegan, who ran an IMSA car there. And they're going to be all in different divisions. So, in all honesty, I applaud NASCAR for keeping this draw system, the no practice, because it actually is made for some entertaining races. But for this at Daytona, they definitely need to have some sort. Even if it's kind of like a Saturday night short track, you know, it's a 15-minute session. You go out there, you either go out there or you don't. So this is the only time you'll hear me say, I don't like this, because they need the practice at Daytona. But all the other tracks, they have enough data. They've gone to plenty of years. Let's have at it.
And honestly, I mean, I do agree with you. They definitely, I feel like, could use it for that Daytona road course, just because it's not like the Indianapolis infield course or even the Charlotte road course. When you're dealing with Daytona, you're not just dealing with an infield course. You're also dealing with those massive bankings, and that's not something you can take lightly in these NASCAR vehicles. So I hope that they'll let them get some on-track time, because it's going to be very sketchy racing if they don't. But overall, for the rest of the season and the events, I'm really excited about this, because I personally think the racing has been better this year without the practice lap and without the qualifying. Unload the trailer and made the best driver win. I really like that approach. It really just shows, separates the teams that come to the track super prepared, that really have their cars figured out, and the teams that kind of massage on it throughout the weekend, which is why I feel like a driver like Kyle Busch has been kind of behind the eight ball and not been winning races like we're accustomed to. So I'm excited to see how that pans out, especially when you think of it this way. When we get to Phoenix, for the championship race, when we're going to crown our 2020 title holders, they're going to be the best of the four drivers who unloaded with the best car that weekend. No practicing, no time to massage on it. You literally rely on your notes and bring the best piece you can, and whoever brings the best car is going to win the championship. And that intrigue, you know, has been holding a lot for me, and I'm really excited to see how it pans out.
I cannot wait for it myself. So run down the trucks, because we need to talk about the Texas Cup race. Kyle Busch, again, your winner. Kristen Ekins, Matt Crafton, Stuart Friesen, impressive run for him, and Brett Moffat, your top five. Tyler Ankrum, Justin Haley, Grant Enfinger, Ben Rhodes, Ross Chastain, your top 10. Derek Cross, Rafael Lazard, Ryan Truex, Austin Wayne Self, and Ty Majeski, your top 15. Sheldon Creed, Corey Roper, Timmy Hill, Dane Smith, and Clay Greenfield, your top 20. Spencer Davis, Cody Rupfer, Angela Rutsch, Spencer Boyd, and Aki Agato, top 25 for them. By the way, he makes his return to the Truck Series after his last race in 2018 or 17. Tim Views, Todd Gillen, Jordan Anderson, Jennifer Jo Cobb, Austin Hill, your top 30. Brendan Poole, Tate Fogman, Johnny Sauter, Norm Benning, Natalie Deck, your top 35. And 36 in last place, Tanner Gray. So once we move from there, Sunday we had the O'Reilly Auto Parts 500. I know that sponsor. I know O'Reilly's. And this race had, first off, some very interesting characters in it, and then one dumb motherfucker who does not need to be in NASCAR at all anymore.
Well, we might as well just talk about the elephant in the room then, since you brought it up. Quinn Hoff is that driver that Zach refers to, a driver that, you know, many of you out there may not know by name. He's kind of coming to the sport in the last few years. Definitely came onto the scene right around 2018 was when he started getting a few more, I guess you could say a few more starts under his belt. But coming into the 2020 season, he has never ran full-time in any of the top NASCAR divisions. I'm even talking K&N, ARCA, Truck, Xfinity, no full-time competition in any of those events. In his ARCA starts, he only has 5 starts total before being moved up to the Xfinity Series, where he ran, looks like, about a dozen races over the course of 2 years, before running about a dozen races last year in Cup Series before going full-time this year. So definitely not a whole lot of experience. And the incident we're talking about, just one of many incidents that the 00 found himself in this year, just kind of causing caution left and right. It was a late race miscue. They were coming off of turn 4, right in the middle of green flag pit stop. Several of the leaders had already made their stops, and some different strategies were playing out. Quinn Hoff was in the outside lane, not in the normal groove. Normally, when you're coming to pit road, they expect you to be in the very most groove, signaling the drivers, waving them off, saying, hey, I'm coming to pit road. But no, instead, he goes from the top most groove, cuts down, and just slams right at the door of Christopher Bell, who is coming to pit road. The ensuing contact sent the 00 for a spin and took him right into the front bumper of Matt Benedetto, who was having a phenomenal race, was running top 5 all event, was looking poised to have a great run, and then that contact completely undid all that. Some of the drivers that were pinned a lap down included Ryan Blaney, who had dominated the race. Another mile and a half where Blaney led multiple stages, led multiple laps, looked like he was going to have another win in the bag to have it himself pinned a lap down and was forced to take the wave around and try to recover as many positions as he could. But it was just an absolute disgusting display of what the sport has kind of become for some of these teams where, you know, money talks and bullshit walks. If you, I mean, you could be the best driver out there, but unless you're bringing a sponsor to some of these teams, they're not even going to give you a second look. And for a driver like Half, who, you know, a lot of his opportunities have come from deep pockets from his family and from different connections there, it's definitely shown a driver that's kind of got himself to the, what should be the top rung and most competitive elite club of motorsports here in the United States, and has just kind of made a mockery of that by buying his way in and just making dumbass decisions like that on the track that have no business in what should be America's premier stock car racing league series. This is not your Joe Blow, let's go to a Saturday night and just put a $2,000 car on the track and hope for the best. Like, these guys are supposed to be professional, and that racing incident, if you even want to call it that, was the biggest slap in the face to our sport and the professional standard we like to hold ourselves to.
This legitimately is someone we can't even call a driver. He's a jackass who doesn't deserve the ride he's in. He just comes in with deep pockets. He's had some success in late models. Just because you got a couple wins under your belt doesn't mean you've had success. I could legitimately go out there and run a late model and probably get as many wins as he did within the same time period. The fact of the matter is that he did not run any full-time seasons at all. In fact, this year, if the whole pandemic had subsided, he would have raced almost more times this season than he would in all of his Xfinity and Cup starts from the previous year. There's not any rookies that I can think of that have gone from running all partial schedules to running a full-time Cup schedule. Tyler Reddick, he hopped from rides after he left Brad Keselowski Racing. He hopped ride to ride in the Xfinity Series. He never ran full time, but then went to Junior Motorsports and landed a full time ride, getting a championship. He's the only driver I can ever think of that hopped around for a little bit without doing a full season. This legitimately is not a driver.
And, you know, I one may argue that Blaney kind of had a similar path. He ran full-time for Brad Keselowski a couple seasons in the trucks, but for a lot of the years he was part-time, bouncing between different rides in the Xfinity Series with his dad, then got signed with Roger Penske, ran a couple of part-time seasons for Keselowski before getting a couple full-time campaigns. But the main difference there was Ryan Blaney spent years in the development series. He was there from about 2011 all the way up through till 2016 when he got his first full-time Cup Series deal. And he was running not, you know, full seasons in a lot of those campaigns, but a majority of the races in top flight equipment and winning races left and right. You know, not just filling a spot in the back of the pack and running a couple half-ass seasons and calling that good enough experience for the Cup division. So definitely it was a very, very sad display of what money has kind of turned the sport into. But it's one of them deals, you know. It comes with wanting to have, you know, big corporate sponsors on your door and not the number of the driver you root and cheer for every weekend. So I don't know. It's just one of them deals.
Well, the last thing I want to say is Kevin Hoff had posted on Twitter, Facebook, and all social medias, a picture of a broken side mirror. So there's only two mirrors in the Cup cars. There's a rear view mirror, just like you have in your normal car. And there's a little mirror that sometimes are, you know, circles or little squares. They're nothing big and crazy, and they sit right in front, essentially in front of the steering wheel, right on the window. Evidently, his broke off. Where he was on the track, there is no reason for him to have dive-bombed to try to get down the pit road. Like you said, Brady, he should have signaled. The biggest thing is if you have that broken side mirror and you know you have to come down to the pits, just go straight to the bottom. Hug the bottom. Even get on the apron if you have to, especially when you're 9 laps down. There's no reason for that. And then another is, where was the spotter? The spotter, after doing some research, had spotted him, said, "Oh, yeah, you're clear." When you have two cars coming at you at speed, both Hoff and his spotter both need to be taken out of the track and not be able to come back until they do some more training, especially the spotter. And because that, even me, I could go to the track and spot better than this guy. In fact, I challenge both him and Quaff. Let's go do some go-kart racing. If I win, I get your ride for the rest of the year. Guarantee you, he won't show up.
Well, I mean, probably not, but, you know, and you brought up something that has been kind of brought to light there. Brad Keselowski was one of the few drivers that was very outspoken about it, about how NASCAR should step in situations like this and force a driver to go back to a lower division if they prove make decisions on track and the Cup decisions that aren't reflective of the talent and prestige that we expect out of our Cup Series drivers. And it is being analyzed by NASCAR. Whether or not they'll actually follow through with that is a whole other thing entirely, but Vice President of Competition Scott Miller was quoted on the Morning Drive as saying that he and NASCAR recognized that Quinn Hoff's move was a very poor decision and that they plan to sit down with Hoff and talk to him about that decision. He says they review every incident after every race, and while they didn't speak with him Sunday, they will be speaking to him before cars are back on track Thursday night in Kansas. And I think they're going to be keeping a little bit closer eye on him and making sure that he doesn't make more mistakes like this that end up costing a lot of drivers some very, very valuable points and positions. Like I said, it took several major contenders out of the top five that were very much shoe-ins for having a great race.
And the last thing I'm going to say about this before we talk about the race, because we only have about 15 minutes left, he has been involved in 6 on-track incidences. He has the most speeding penalties among drivers this year, and he's also been in the way of a lot of issues, a lot of spotters. If you go, Brady, I recommended this to you because I listened to this podcast by Dirty Mo Media called Door Bumper Clear, because I want to compare how crappy other podcasts are compared to us, but also to get views on other things. And I've been going through backlog of their catalog from this year. They all say the same thing, that Double Zero did this, Double Zero did that constantly. So he needs to be off the track. But other than that, we actually had a race outside of this controversy, idiotic person. And I have to say, did not see Austin Dillon or Tyler Reddick being in the top two.
And, you know, and that is the one thing, that the one silver lining you can take from this unfortunate incident is, even though it robbed drivers that had dominant days of maybe getting the victory, it set the stages for one of the most compelling and exciting finishes we've had in the 2020 season to date. When that caution flag flew on lap 307, that was 27 laps to go in the middle of green flag pit stops, and it opened the door for some strategy. And the biggest thing that really stood out to me was just how much teams could play the tire game. A track like Texas that has a history of being super treacherous, super tricky to get around, I didn't think we'd see as many no-tire calls and two-tire calls as we saw, and those calls is what made the difference and was the race-winning move for the Richard Childress Racing camp. Coming into the pits, it was it was coming down to those drivers. They were behind guys like Joey Logano, Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, who were up front when that caution flag flew. Those drivers took four tires, and many thought, oh, it's going to be a no-contest deal. If the Richard Childress contingent of Austin Dillon took only two tires, and Tyler Reddick took no tires to get themselves restarting on the front row. But that wasn't the case. Both of those fast Chevrolets were able to not only maintain position, but Austin Dillon drove away from the competition behind him as they were duking it out for third and fourth. And they even it wasn't just that they got lucky on a good one good restart. They had a couple more incidents that stacked the field up two more times. A caution flag flying on lap 320, and then the final caution flag flying on lap 330. That set up two more restarts, including an overtime finish. So those drivers not only had to put those tires to their absolute limits, but they had to put their cars to the very max edge and hold off some of NASCAR's best in, on these worn-out tires. And the fact that they were able to do so was just absolutely mind-blowingly impressive. And it just continues to show how much the RCR program has been bolstered and improved just by the presence of adding Tyler Reddick this year. You can just see it in their finishes, how they're right there knocking on the playoffs. Austin Dillon now in the playoffs with this win. The speed that has been kind of missing at Richard Childress Racing now since about 2013 when Harvick left is starting to come creeping its way back in, and I definitely feel like Tyler Reddick has to take a lot of that credit because he has completely invigorated and rejuvenated this program and kind of given them, you know, some confidence that they were kind of lacking. And also, you know, for a lot of those people out there that kind of bash on Dillon and say that he's not a good successor to the Dale Earnhardt number three in Cup, you know, kind of a little bit of a pep in his step. He did something that the Intimidator could never do with the number three car, and that was win in the Cup Series at Texas. So a bit of bragging rights there, and it was kind of a meaningful race win for Austin Dillon. For many of you out there who followed him when he first came into the sport right around 2011 and 2010, he was known for campaigning the cowboy hat around the garage area. So definitely probably a cherished trophy for him, getting that cowboy hat, the cowboy boots, and the six shooters.
That's the wonderful thing about the Texas race. You always get some cool trophies, and you get quite a few of them too. But overall, this race, I mean, it was a fantastic race. We saw action from start to beginning, and we saw a dominant Penske car out there, which, you know, like you said, Ryan Blaney on his fantastic run, 150 laps led, still a seventh place finish, not the best, but, you know, for someone like Blaney, that gives you some confidence because a majority of your wins have come at Roval. You have your win at Roval, Pocono, two Talladega wins. Winning at something that isn't an odd track, and when I say odd, I mean something that we don't race that often, this kind of gives you a confidence boost that, okay, maybe the mile and a half tracks I'm getting better at. Obviously, he didn't get the win, but even leading over half the race, it still gives you that big boost of like, okay, I think I know what I'm doing. I'm getting better and better, especially with the lack of practice. Definitely helped with that. And I think he's definitely got a little pep in his step too, when you think about it, for how hard he was working to get his first cookie cutter track win. I know that term hasn't been used for a while, but that's what Texas is. It's a cookie cutter track that you can haul the mail at. Overall, I really enjoyed this race. I thought it was a decent race, and I, like you said, it wasn't a fantastic race, but there was still action throughout, and I was interested the entire time I was watching it.
You know, and honestly, it was probably the most exciting Texas race I've seen in a good while, and I could really kind of attribute it to this no practice, no qualifying session where you just really just turn them loose and just kind of tune on it as you go. I think it's made the competition a lot closer and made drivers really have to fight for every last ounce of track that they're given. And I saw something at Texas I have not seen since those early days when they were really struggling with the configuration of the corners and the elevation. And that was a big, major pileup. We had about, what was that, 10 cars, 10, 11 cars swept up in the crash on lap 220. It kind of got tipped off there when some drivers were checking up. Blaney lost some grip in the outside lane on a restart, and that stacked up the field behind him. And that accordion effect ended up punting the number 18 into the back bumper of Martin Truex. And that sent the 18 just careening off into the grass. I'm still shocked at the amount of times I've rewatched that replay. and seeing Blaney just barrel it off into the weeds there, and that splitter maintained, you know, its shape, remained intact after so many, you know, years since they invented the splitter for NASCAR competition. And I've seen so many noses just absolutely torn to fucking pieces in these races. And to see Kyle Busch, you know, get away scot-free and then come back to a fourth-place finish, I'm still completely shocked that he was able to do that and, you know, get out of that unscathed. But the same could be said for the other drivers, including his teammate Martin Truex Jr., who got several hard hits. Also, the 42 got wrapped up in that. The 24, 37, 47, so several drivers had their days completely shot right there on that incident. But it was definitely something I've not seen since the early days of Texas, having multiple cars just wadded up there.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting – it was an interesting race for that point. It was interesting to see how it played out versus other Texas races. And I think one thing that made this race a little more interesting was that fact that we had no practice, because these teams couldn't go out. They had to adjust all these cars throughout the race. And, you know, you look at it, they just kept on getting caution after caution. You know, it wasn't a ton of cautions by any means, 13% under caution, but it gave them enough time to come under pit road and make those necessary adjustments to go faster. And I think that's what, you know, makes this the racing form we have right now with what's going on so much better than we expected. You know, I didn't expect or think that we would have a lot of these, we wouldn't have some interesting races. When we first came back from the pandemic, I thought, okay, it's just going to be kind of like it had been, you know, some action. And then we get the first Darlington race. Okay, that was pretty good. We get the second Darlington race. It's like, okay, wait a minute. This is taking a turn. Then we get the two Charlotte races and we dominoed. I haven't had a race that I haven't turned off, or I haven't had a race where I just paused to go, you know, do something else for 20, 30 minutes. I was glued to the TV, which says a lot. It's been a while since I've been like that with repeated races. Oftentimes, if I didn't see the race, I would just watch it on YouTube or watch it later to take my notes. And then instead I've been sat down on the couch watching it all the way through without taking a break.
And one also thing, you know, talking about a long time, this was the first time that Richard Childress Racing has gotten a 1-2 finish in a Cup Series event since 2011, when Clint Bowyer and Jeff Burton came across the line 1-2 at Talladega in the fall race. And this is only the fourth time in team history, which that shocks me that they've not had more 1-2 finishes. But then, you know, you just kind of have to think back on their history. Even though Dale Earnhardt carried that team for many years, it was just a one-car organization for a bulk of that dominance. They brought in Mike Skinner in the 90s, and while Skinner had some good runs, you know, he just never was the top-flight driver when it came to the Cup Series competition. But he still had some good runs there, so I was surprised that they never got more 1-2 finishes. But then you think about the times, you know, in the 2000s when they had Kevin Harvick, Jeff Burton, you know, drivers like Clint Bowyer, and all that high-caliber talent that came through the RCR doorways in the early 2000s, the fact that they didn't rack up more 1-2 finishes just astonishes me.
I can't say the same. You know, it is interesting to see that RCR gets their first ever 1-2 with two different drivers who come kind of from similar backgrounds. Both of them did dirt late model, come up from the ARCA trucks, K&N, have done everything and anything. Tyler Reddick, a two-time champion in the Xfinity Series. Austin, I think he's a one-time champion or two-time.
He won the Truck Series title and Xfinity Series title, and he won Rookie of the Years in both those series as well.
That's right. So it's great to see, you know, there's a lot of prep behind those two, if you look at it also. They're not just people who kind of just studied their way in. You know, I remember seeing Tyler Reddick at Kansas in the Truck Series, him, Austin Terrio, wrecking during qualifying when they did the group qualifying, and seeing him disheveled and come back from that for an okay finish to now being in a cup car, almost competing for his first ever win. I didn't get to catch the race live because of something, and I rewatched it, but I was keeping up with timing and scoring on my phone, just watching and just tick by. I'm like, oh, what's going to happen? Oh, does he got him? Does he got him? It was fantastic. And that kind of made me want to watch the entire race. So to go down the lineup, Austin Dillon, get his first career win at Texas in the Cup Series. Tyler Reddick, Joey Logano, Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, your top five. Eric Jones, Ryan Blaney, Kurt Busch, Brad Keselowski, Eric Almirola. Great day for the forwards this week. Is your top 10. Clint Bowyer, Chase Elliott, Ryan Newman, Bubba Wallace, and Michael McDowell. Top 15 there. Corey LaJoie, Matt DiBenedetto, Matt Kenseth, Chris Buescher, Denny Hamlin, your top 20. Christopher Bell, John Hunter Nemechek, Daniel Suarez, J.J. Haley, Gray Galding, and Jimmy Johnson. Gray Galding, your top 25. Jimmy Johnson, Brendan Poole, Reed Sorensen, Martin Truex Jr., and Alex Bowman, top 30. Josh Balicki, Joey Gase, B.J. McLeod, Gwynn Huff, Ty Dillon, your top 35. Timmy Hill, William Byron, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Cole Custer, Ryan Preece, your top 40. I can't wait for Kansas. We have two truck races, an Xfinity race, and a cup race. And an ARCA race, yeah. I believe.
We and a partridge in a pear tree. Golly.
But that being said, we
got... You thought I was asleep. You were wrong.
We have two cup races, Brady?
Yeah, we have one Thursday night as well.
That's right. I forgot. Holy moly. This season just keeps on just, so we got just a couple minutes left. No, So we got about a minute and a half left. So I'm looking forward to Kansas. Kansas is an interesting track. I've been there. I've worked it. It's a fun configuration, fun track. I will be back home when the races are going on, so it'll be fun to sit down and watch the races with my dad for the first time in a few years.
Oh, yeah, and then we'll have to catch a couple of those races when you come through my way there on Saturday.
Yeah, buddy! A minute left. John, you have anything to add?
Stay safe.
Yes.
And buy silver.
All right.
That's all I've got to say.
Buy silver.
That's right.
Brady, what would you like to add?
Well, I just like to add that I'm going to keep my eye on the situation. We'll update you here on the Charlotte line, but some very sad news coming out of my hometown, Newton, with the regards to the Iowa Speedway. Many rumors on the wall about its maybe future closure. Maybe Roger Penske might buy the track and save its future. Definitely not the news I wanted to hear after they had their only racing weekend this last week. So definitely going to be keeping my ears peeled for that and hoping for the best situation there, because I do love my hometown track.
As do I. My favorite track where I met both you, our buddy Greg, and many other people and had my first opportunities with many races. I will say I'll be back home and we will keep you updated with races and keep you updated on when our next show will be next week. It's been a great night, and this has been the Charlotte Line yet again.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Au revoir.